All right, you guys ready?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Renegade HPG podcast. I'm Travis, and today I'm going to be joined by Kevin Hansen and Yuval Kordov, and we are going to be talking about building battle mechs with Lego. Kevin and Yuval have been sharing their creations on Instagram at HansenBricks and GothBricks2000, respectively, and we're going to be going through some of those awesome builds today. We get a little background on them, what got them into Lego, and what inspired them to build some of these very awesome mechs. And I'll throw some picks up right here for those that are watching this so they can kind of get a little glimpse if they haven't caught you guys on Instagram. And I know, Kevin, you have a YouTube. Yuval, I think do you have a YouTube also?
With some I do. Of
your, awesome. And I'll throw some links of that down below so people can check those out after this conversation, of course. But let's go ahead and dive in. So which one of you is Kevin? Let's let you introduce yourself first.
Yeah, I can go first. Awesome. Yeah, my name's Kevin Hansen. And I guess just a little bit of background. Like I'm actually, I work in video games as a profession. So I'm a level designer. And then just needed like a different creative outlet on the side. So when I'm off work, I don't want to deal with anything as electronic. Lego actually ends up being a lot of electronic designing now. But it's really nice just to do some like tactical and physical outside of the computer.
Awesome.
So that's how I got building Lego mechs.
Very cool.
It was about 10 years ago. There's so many good BattleTech mechs that have already been done in Lego. I found one specific one and I was like, yes, this is what I was waiting for in my childhood. And then a few years later, I decided it was time to try my own hand. So
awesome. Yuval, how about you?
Awesome. Yeah. Funny, similar story. Like I'm in tech and, I have two little kids and, there's a birthday present one day of Lego. And I was like, oh yeah, man, I had such fond memories of like classic space Lego, classic castle Lego. Mm-hmm. And it was one of those things that's like, I'd walk by Lego in like a toy store as an adult. I'm like, no, I shouldn't do it. But it's kind of funny. Like I actually have a few past lives. So I actually wrote and published a couple of D&D books back in the early 2000s. And there was just a weird confluence of the planets. And I was like, oh, maybe I'll reboot that and I'll do it with Lego and I'll make it sci-fi instead of fantasy. So a very kind of convoluted start to it all.
Very cool. And Kevin, you were talking, what was your first mech that got you in?
So I think the first one, like there'd been one done like 10 years ago. That was a Marauder that I thought was done really, really well. So at that point, all right, what we get a lot or what you see a lot in the Lego community, people are like, oh, do you make instructions? And instructions are a ton of extra time. So of course I asked this guy, I found him online. Do you have instructions? Like, no, sorry. So that my first project was literally just like taking this guy's creation, rebuilding it myself. 10 years ago, the digital design programs that were available were rudimentary compared to now. I think there was something called Mike's Lego CAD. That had just been made by some guy named Mike, apparently.
Yep.
You could get in that, and the bricks didn't know how to be put together, but you can move them around in 3D space, and essentially, if you knew how they connected yourself, you could build your own models in that. So rebuilt this guy's model myself just to have as a personal model, and it was a really fun experience. Took me like 6 months, and then just was kind of done with it for them. But I think it kind of planted the seed to come back to it.
Yeah. Yuval, what was your first?
My first recent.
Sure. Did we go in two waves?
You know, what's funny is I'll send you something. Maybe you could post it. My very first Lego mock as an adult I made, 3 or so years ago, is pretty funny. It was like a combination of my daughter's Lego friends set.
Okay.
And some random Star Wars Lego I had sitting around. It was pretty amazing compared to. What I've been building lately. So
that's quite the crossover friends in Star Wars.
And I'm still using those little Lego friends heads. I like them and I'm using them in kind of devious ways.
Yeah. So anybody who doesn't know, the Friends series of Lego is a specific sets that are built for young women, I think.
Okay.
Is that correct?
It's a very, stereotypical girly girl Lego.
Yeah. So,
much more vibrant colors in those sets. Yeah, they're really pretty.
Awesome. And I haven't seen that Marauder. Is that something, if I just search Lego Marauder, will that pop up, or is that kind of lost in the
No, it's still out there. I think if you search Lego BattleTech, it's still one of the top images that comes up.
Interesting, because I had done a couple searches before we talked, and I hadn't seen the Marauder. It seems interesting how they'd work out the barrel and stuff.
I remember there's another guy, and I can't remember his name, but he was making BattleTech Lego, and for some reason it was all green, like bright green. And I can't remember his name, but he made like a ton of just like classic stuff. That was years ago. And he might still be making it, but there used to be a website that was a specific like BattleTech Lego, like old school website with a forum or something, but I don't think it exists anymore.
Yeah, I can actually fill that in. That's it's either, there was one called Brick Commander.
Yes.
And then there was another one called, and I could never figure out if it was the same guy who had redone them, like digitally versus physically. I think the other one might have just been Brick Mex or Brick Commander or something like that. Yeah. I'm not sure. But
yeah, I recognize Brick Commander, and there was like a, you know, I was looking at YouTube channels before, before we signed on, and it was like CBJ Bricks or something like that. But I'll throw all these links down below for people that are watching, so people can kind of check out all those other YouTube channels. But
the guy you're talking about who does the black and green, I think it's CF, I'm going to butcher it, like Dolgfor, D-O-L-G-E-R, okay, or something like that. But yeah, he's still very active, and I see he has new videos every once in a while. So.
Now, are you guys starting in a program? You know, I know, Kevin, you had said that, you know, there was a program that you started out with. Is there a modern one that people use these days? And do you always start out, on the computer and then move to the physical, or do you start physical and, you know, kind of fix problem, troubleshoot maybe a little bit with the software?
Well, I know the fun thing here is that both of our answers are going to be extremely different.
Okay.
I know we've chatted a bit before about like our personal approach to Lego.
Yeah.
Mine personally always start digital because my library of bricks is never what, you know, the total bricks are. You can run out of pieces, or it's just actually like for me way easier to iterate when you have the digital workspace. You know, you can make version A and then B and just, you know, keep copying it and changing stuff. And it's way easier to edit than actually if you build it physically and you're like, oh, now I want to change something. Well, great. You have to spend quite a while taking it back apart and putting it back together and all that. So yeah, always digital first for me. I get it to a certain point where I imagine it's worth testing, and then I order some physical bricks.
And what's that program? What program are you using these days?
So I've used two. There was one made maybe about 5 years ago now, actually by the Lego company called Lego Digital Designer.
Okay.
And when they started that, they had this grand plan that it's unfortunate didn't work. But the idea was you could build something, you would send Lego your file, they would box that thing up and send it to you in the mail. And
that is an idea.
It's
going
to be kind of expensive, but that it would have been awesome if it really worked.
Yeah.
Probably just due to the complications that you would imagine would arise from that kind of system.
Yeah.
they've since discontinued it, but they left the program up. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, because it's not used like they're not making revenue off it anymore necessarily. It's very rarely updated. Mm-hmm. And since then, there's a third-party website called BrickLink that Lego actually just purchased in the last year. But they've created their own editor, and it's regularly updated, and it has all the bells and whistles, anything you'd want from a digital design program for Lego. So it's really awesome how complex and holistic that's become in the last about 2 years.
Yeah. For people that are kind of casual or not so familiar with Lego, I know when I was just kind of fiddling around a couple years ago, I didn't even realize that you can kind of pick up individual bricks. And so what is that? What is that process, you know, for people?
Yeah, it's funny, right? I mean, like that's like of all the questions I get on Instagram or YouTube, it's like half of them are like, where do you get all your bricks? And it's like, well, yeah, BrickLink, right? There's another website called Brick Owl, but I remember thinking the same thing when I got back into it. I would buy a couple sets. It's like, okay, I'm gonna learn how they're doing this. I'm gonna see how they're engineering this build. And then after a while, I was like, man, holy shit, these kits are expensive, right? Like, how many sets can I buy? And I want six more of these, but that means I'd have to buy three more sets that are $50. And then you find BrickLink. So it's such a weird. It's such a weird marketplace. Like I'm so curious about the kind of folks that get into it. And I know a lot of BrickLink sellers really well, and they're really nice people, but you know, they basically are buying, you know, sets in bulk and, you know, on sale, then parting them out and then selling them through their personal stores on BrickLink. And it's an amazing service. It really is. And you can do this through Lego's site as well. Lego has a pick a brick service on their website, but then the order goes, I think, to Poland. It takes like 6 weeks, and they just ship you this giant box of shit all mixed together with all of your fancy tile pieces and all of your brick pieces. And they're like, come on, guys, you can do better than this, right?
Yeah.
And it's also pretty expensive. So BrickLink, yeah, it's a great source.
Not to mention limited. You can't get all the bricks.
Yeah. Yeah.
I bet it's easily like one third, if less.
Apparently they've opened it up. Available.
Okay.
And I don't know if this is something to do with like acquiring BrickLink, but apparently you can get more of those rare parts. But I remember the exact same thing. I was like, yeah, I want this corner tile in dark gray. And they're like, well, yeah, you can't even get corner tiles here.
Wow.
Yeah. But yeah, so BrickLink and you know, BrickLink Studio by extension is the software, made, in tandem with that. And, you know, it's interesting, the approaches, right? There's almost like anything in the world today, there's divide. So that's the divide between the digital builders and the physical builders, right? And, you know, for the first couple of years, I would say I was building purely physical. And that was, you know, just again, like looking for the tactile alternative to being on a computer all day long.
Yeah.
But yeah, I eventually tried Studio and I was like, okay, yeah, this is making sense. This is making sense. And like Kevin said, for iteration, like, to come down, like last night, I was redesigning a lower torso for one of my mechs. And I was like, oh, I could do this. I could do this. This is going to take a long time. Time is so limited nowadays, right? So I was like, hell with this. And I just opened up Studio and, you know, within half an hour, I came up with two different variations that were good enough, right? And the other cool thing with the software that I've done personally, and I've posted about this a lot, is I'll build something in real life. And, you know, in the course of building it in real life, it's, you're kind of trying this. It's like, oh, no, not really. I'll try this, not really. And then you don't realize it, but by the end of the day, your build is kind of like hodgepodge. So it's not as structurally sound or as efficient as it could be. And so that's when I'll actually go into Studio and I'll digitize it, and like I'll put it into the matrix, and I'll be like, oh yeah, I have this 2x4 plate and then this 2x2 plate next to each other. That should be a 2x6 plate, right? Just so it's really amazing for iteration. It's really amazing for optimization. And again, like if you're making instructions like Kevin does, it's, you know, it's got that built in. So pretty sweet.
Awesome.
Yeah, that's one of the newer features they've added that I think a lot of people were sorely missing before.
Yeah. And what's brought each of you to BattleTech? You know, did you find BattleTech first and then the Lego, or did kind of, you know, the Lego kind of pull you into BattleTech as an option for the mecha?
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm old school. I played BattleTech when FASA first released it, right? I played every RPG under the sun. I played every war game under the sun. So, you know, early days, my influences were like Wasteland and BattleTech. So it's like, I had my post-apocalypse, I had my giant robots, and, you know, that's never left me. So I've stayed current, you know, with a weird progression and reverse progression of BattleTech over the decades. It's weird to say decades, and it's never left me. So, you know, whenever somebody will comment, it's like, oh, is that Metal Gear? I'm like, no, man, that's not Metal Gear. Is that War? I'm like, no, man. Like, go look at some source material. Okay, go look at some BattleTech, and you'll see where my influences are.
Awesome. Well, what other than Lego, how are you kind of in contact with the IP now?
You know, I just look at the new stuff, really. Yeah. Like, I used to paint minis too, but, you know, time's limited, so
is,
you know, I'm not playing anything with anybody. Like, I'm not playing any actual BattleTech. I played the Kickstarter game that came out a while ago, and obviously I've played like every one of the CRPGs and the MechWarrior lines and stuff that came out. But yeah, it's pretty dry right now.
Kevin, what about you?
Yeah, for me, it's been around for quite a while for me. So my first pickup in the series was MechWarrior 2 when I was a kid, and then from there went into the novels and tabletop. But yeah, for me, it's generally mostly always been about like the lore. I think I got through as a child, as like a teenager, probably 80%, I'd say, of the books that were published at that time. It's just, hooked by the universe. So. Yeah.
You know, it's funny. People look at those like series books, whether it's like BattleTech series books or like Warhammer series books or whatever, but I really like the BattleTech ones. They really sucked me in.
They're good. I mean, that was my primary because I got my stepbrothers introduced me when I was young, probably 11. But they would only, you know, visit during the summers. And so, you know, I think we played maybe, you know, once or twice, and then I got fixated, but they were never around. And then I started picking up the novels and pretty much just read the novels. And I think I had like MechWarrior first edition. And so I spent a lot of time building, you know, characters that I never played, you know, and then building mechs that I never played and reading the books. And yeah, and a lot, I'm this, some of the lore is just kind of influential for kind of a young, you know, a young teenager with a single mom raising them, you know, and kind of, you know, reading, reading Charette and stuff and kind of just learning about kind of honor and duty and kind of evolving. And then it was interesting, Kevin, I'll ask you this, but having been immersed in the lore and all the novels and then getting Mech Warrior 2 and the chance to kind of experience that, you know, kind of on the video game was very, very cool. You know, as anybody who has like a favorite book that gets translated into a movie or something can attest. I'm curious, like for you, having started with Mech Warrior 2 and then gone to the novels, what was that kind of experience in terms of kind of the, you know, that next step in the immersion of the universe?
Yeah, I feel like, you know, the books, they were able to flesh it out a lot more than you can in a video game, especially at the time, right? Like, that was a simulator. So it was, you got the core, like, stompy mech shoot, but, you know, you didn't have the universe and the characters behind it.
Yeah.
And that's obviously a really key piece. The thing that's, I think, as a big video game fan, I think the thing that's sad a lot of times is when things do get translated into video games or movies from something that has such a breadth of a background is if you're a big fan, a lot of times it's done incorrectly, you know, like it's glossed over. Like say, for example, if you play like MechWarrior 4, I love MechWarrior 4, but there'd just be inconsistencies, right? Like this faction shouldn't have this mech because it's not like, you know, just like lore breaking, things like that.
Yeah.
And as you've all mentioned, like the most recent Battletech game, that's what I really loved about that was it was so immersive as well as a compelling game to play. It fit really well with all the backstory and the lore. You could tell, obviously, the people that had worked on it were some of the people that actually cared and created the original universe. So,
very cool.
Yeah, and I mean, I always wanted it to be. It's funny because I always even wanted more, right? Like the lore is everything to me. And like, yeah, obviously, we love our giant robots. We love battles, but you know, it's another one of these franchises where it's never been correctly or broadly enough explored, right? I mean, there's so much history there. There's so much interesting stuff to talk about. I want like the epic Battletech RPG where, yeah, like I'll step into a mech, but that's not gonna be like the entirety of my experience. And then, yeah, kind of like you said about the tech, like just basically taking the different eras, the different technologies and just gamifying it, right? Mm-hmm. Instead of treating it, you know, as these actual different eras where things were not around. Yeah.
Very cool. And Kevin, you're kind of in that industry, you know, kind of what are your insights in terms of kind of the process of production and how that evolves? And I mean, it seems like it's ripe for a Mass Effect level development and immersion because it has that perfect mix of like epic storyline and then, you know, and then immersive combat.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I'd point out that I have nothing to do with any of the Battletech games, so nothing I say will directly be how those
work. Or just a fan that has a loose familiarity with that medium, you know?
So the types of games I worked on a franchise called Little Big Planet. It's a platformer for PlayStation, and right now I work at a new studio that Wargaming, the World of Tanks people have opened. So I've worked on multiplayer games. The thing about video games that anybody works on video games will tell you is it's like you're chucking everything together and trying to get this product out of it, right? You want story, you want like basically movie types of graphics, and then you need to have compelling gameplay that keeps you coming back as well. Mm-hmm. And then mix and do it just like so many creative people. It's just really hard to get that to come out well. And that's why you see so many video games and we see the end product. You're like, oh, it's just, I wish it was just a little bit better here. It's really hard to get that final product to that point, especially when you mix in like, you know, the corporate aspect of it, right? You need to have it shipped by a certain date.
Yeah.
So you basically have all these pressures and, a lot of times just something doesn't make it right. You sacrifice one thing for the other, right? A lot of times for gameplay, story goes out the window to a certain aspect. And when you have like, I think a particular problem or something that Battletech have to overcome in any kind of game, especially if you look at like MechWarrior Online, something I bet that those guys really struggled with is you have all this fiction and this lore. And, you know, like if a medium laser is supposed to do something, but then you get into the game and the balance is off, you have to decide, okay, now we have a conflict. You can't keep the medium laser as it was designed in some technical readout long ago.
Right.
Like we need to tweak it to make our multiplayer game work right now.
Right.
So then, yeah, how do you decide, you know, what wins there, right? You cut the story or change the story in order to make the game play better. It's the same reason why back in MechWarrior 4, like I referenced, you didn't care about what factions the mechs came from. Like anybody can have a Timberwolf, it's fine.
And
that's fine because as a game and an average person playing it, they don't care
about
the Timberwolf's lore, right? They just want a fun game to play.
Right.
And
and I think that's the kind of the error, you know, that the fans come in and that they're like, you know, this, we're the fans and we're playing this game and we're kind of the majority of people playing. And it's so not the case, you know, and I see that, you know, in my own kind of, you know, former career, you know, somewhat current career of, you know, athletics and rowing in particular of, you know, you have your community of on the water rowers, you know, the guys that, you know, do things like you see in the Olympics and the indoor rower is like a training device, you know, for them. And they don't realize that there's about at best maybe 200,000 on the water rowers or people who have even been on the water and rowing, and there's like 12 million indoor rowers. And so it's like easy to kind of come from like being kind of in that and thinking that you're the dominant. And I think that's what the fans do. I mean, even with something like, you know, MechWarrior Online, HBS, or even back in the day, MechWarrior 2. And it's like, people are like, well, you know, we're the BattleTech fans. We're the majority here. And it's like, yeah, you're probably less than 5-10% of the people that are actually like involved in that product. And so, and that's why it's cool when they do resonate with the lore that they've made that, you know, extra attention for that small percentage. And I know MechWarrior 2 was great with that. I mean, all the extra lore that they packed in there kind of in the background. I think that the least lore-like thing in MechWarrior 2 was the intro, just because the people are talking like Intersphere people, but using clan terms, you know, but that's like its greatest sin, but that intro is too cool to be considered a sin anyway. I know when I got into LEGO Big, it was, gosh, what was it? Like the time flies when you get older, right? Maybe like 7 years ago or so. And it was just like, life stress and work was just crazy. And I just like had picked up a cool Star Wars Lego set. I was like, I want to build this. And it was just like, it was total. It was it just like everything else faded away. And for that, you know, hour, 2 hours, I could just, you know, build and kind of sit there and just enjoy it. And then, you know, set it up and let it collect dust, which I feel like at Lego is like the ultimate dust magnet. There's some kind of law of physics, you know, where Lego defies it to
no
bring
joke,
them.
No joke. Like it's funny because I build in black a lot and dust is just an absolute pain in my ass. Like it's like just entropy. Like you can't.
Yeah. Do those kind of like little air dusters work? Like what do you do? How do you keep your Lego clean? That's like the grown up question. You know, no kid would ask that, but the grown ups are like, how do you keep the dust off your Lego?
Yeah. Like those little, actually it's funny. I've got one right here. I'm actually at my Lego desk. Yeah. These little guys here.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I use them before my autos, but sometimes the dust just like accumulates just enough moisture that it just becomes this cake and you can't do anything about it.
Oh man.
I think that's like one of the grossest things about, like I've seen so many Lego sets sitting around offices or people's homes and they're just disgusting. And if they've been there for a year. Yeah. So what I do is I just take them apart very quickly. None of my stuff, as soon as my stuff's photographed, it goes back into like the bins, because it's also awesome for keeping costs down.
Yeah.
You know, like as I get more and more builds done, then I can decommission them and I have more to work with for the next guys.
Awesome. Yeah. Space is definitely an issue. Like it's ridiculous. Like I'm kind of a minimalist. And so it's funny because that creates this weird, like friction with my own hobby, because I'm right now, like I'm actually surrounded by my mechs. And I have like maybe half of my workspace.
Here, grab one. Show us one. Let's see.
This is my life right now, right?
So oh, nice.
It's like I have half of my desk available. And it just grosses me out in a way because I'm such a minimalist, but
yeah.
I don't want to take them apart. So yeah. First world problems.
Yeah. And Kevin, when you're doing mecha, are you only doing battle mechs or you just do like general kind of mech builds? Because I know you do some battle tech, but you're like just tons of just mechs in general.
Yeah, I don't do any battle tech actually. Mine's all original like Dark Legacies material, but it's all influenced by battle tech, right?
Yeah.
That's one of the things that I really like about the Lego community is that every designer has their own like niche they kind of carve out, right? Like Yuval's, he has his own like expansive lore that he's made and all his designs are original. And then for me, the thing that I enjoy more is, you know, trying to merge the Lego with like a franchise I already enjoy. So that's kind of my thing.
Awesome.
And then, yeah, there's numerous other people that have their own little niches.
Definitely. you know, maybe if we can, this won't be good for the people listening to the audio, but maybe we can pull up a little screen share of a favorite build of each of you guys and kind of take us through a little bit of kind of your thought process and kind of troubleshooting and people kind of enjoy. So, Yuval, do you want to pick up a favorite one and we can try to maybe screen share it, take a look at it while you kind of talk a little bit about the creation process for it?
Yeah. Do you want me to, I assume we're going to be editing this. Do you want me to just like bring up my Photos app and like bring up a favorite or something?
Yeah, I can do a screen share and then you can kind of do, there we go.
Do you see the?
I do. Yep. I see it.
Yeah. So, I mean, these are the three main factions in Dark Legacies, right? It's kind of the way I'm operating now is, you know, I'm world building against all of them. So there's the Revenant Sisterhood, they're the All Black. There's the Prelacy Ascendant. So the Revenant Sisterhood, it's almost like a Bene Gesserit organization. This is, so Dark Legacies.
Oh, man, I can't wait for the new Dune movie to come out.
I know. It looks amazing. post-apocalyptic Earth, both nuclear apocalypse and biblical apocalypse.
Man, okay.
I'm saying the word. Demons versus mechs, lots of religion, et cetera, et cetera. But yeah, so these things are basically the story is that, you know, prior to the end of the world, there were these AI driven mechs, right? I mean, it seems sensible to me because, you know, mechs are so sensible that if they did exist, they'd probably be AI driven rather than piloted by humans. But all the AIs basically went insane in the time since the apocalypse and in the current time. So these Revenant Sisterhood mechs are actually driven by these kind of cyborg type children of the Sisterhood. And then I have, the Prelacy, they're kind of like a militant faction. And they actually have a couple AIs that survived the apocalypse. That's their story. And something I've been working with a lot lately is adding actual lighting to my model.
Yeah.
So these are real lights here, and that's been a fun kind of side venture to re-engineer them not only to be fully functional but to actually light up and to get a little bit of that realism. And then fan favorite is this like my number one favorite fan favorite mech. This is the Skavrat Destroyer. And it's funny, in the original Dark Legacies, Skavrats were like a bit faction, and in the new stuff I'm doing, everybody loves them more than anything else. So this one actually, you may not see it from this angle, but it's very Locust inspired. Especially like the weapon pods, kind of the slope down torso. I mean, I'm doing like kind of more of a biomechanical digitigrade leg rather than just like chicken walker leg. But yep. there's a lot of Locust in here, and I just love the classic walker battle mechs, like the Marauder.
Yeah, this definitely looks like that. Just the most BattleTech inspired, mech. It's even got the Mackie crotch guns, going for it.
Yeah, everybody makes fun of me for my crotch guns. And I'm like, look, if you were a giant robot and you had like armored infantry coming at you, like where would you put your PDCs? Right, you put them as possible. So stop giving me a hard time about it.
No, I mean, they started it. I mean, that's where the battle mech started, with the crotch gun. So
like, I found, like, why aren't there more guns on the legs? Like, there's a few battle mechs, come stock with like some machine guns on the knees or something. But
yeah,
it seems an unexplored loadout.
Yeah, you'd have to put on
the three factions. And, I'm doing a lot of world building. So I've been doing a lot of vehicle design lately just to kind of expand it out. And that's been super fun. That's been interesting. From the engineering side as well, to make functional but still aesthetically solid vehicles. That's been a good time.
Oh, these look super cool.
Yeah, okay, like what you just mentioned there is like one of the things that I think like really keeps me coming back to building in Lego is this really nice, like you have to have both those things, right? You got to get the visuals how you want them, but then on the other side you need to have it structurally sound. And that is just kind of like makes this engineer part of your mind really happy when you come up with these little solutions for the problems. And it almost feels a bit like a jigsaw puzzle that you're trying to piece together a solution for visuals. Definitely. That you want to stand up on its own words.
And it's funny because you'll pick up a Lego set. So I mean, obviously, like the stuff that we build is a lot more complicated than your typical Lego set. It's also like 10 times more expensive when you add in the parts count. But the thing I love about a really well designed Lego set is just even though it may look super simple, it's strong. It's typically functional. You can drop it and it's not going to explode, right? So yeah, like trying to achieve the aesthetic plus, you know, there's tons of weight considerations when you get into these size of mechs. Like I have a bunch of YouTube videos on like how to reinforce the hips, how to reinforce the ankles, how to reinforce the shoulders, and try not to make it look like shit while you're doing it, right? So
yeah,
you know, all of that goes into it. And then you still want, it's not like I'm going to be dropping any of these things on the ground, but it's happened. And you don't want it to be, you want it to be strong, right? So that, you know, you feel like you've actually engineered something. You haven't kind of just built, you know, like a paper frame.
Definitely. And for scale, for the people that are just looking at the pictures, how tall were those mechs? Is that like a 12 inch, you know, height on those?
Yeah. You know, I have some photos next to a minifig, but they're probably like, probably my tallest gets up to like, yeah, between 12 and 16.
Something okay. Like that. Nice. Yeah. That sounds mech scale. That's good. Put that mech warrior, minifig mech warrior in there. Kevin, let's pull one of yours.
Yeah. Let me screen share here.
And Yuval, for those watching, I'll throw a little link to Yuval's YouTube where he has all those kind of how to and build videos. I know Kevin's is more kind of like a showcase, but Yuval, you got a lot of, you know, in depth YouTube content there. Awesome. Now that I'm remembering it.
Yeah, he's got tons of great videos on basically how to get all your own mechs up.
Kevin and I still need to collaborate on getting his King Crab to walk. I know we can do it.
Awesome.
Yeah, that's one thing I've received a bit of crap for from you all is that my designs, I definitely focus more on the visuals rather than like any kind of articulation.
Yeah.
Where his builds are always functionality first.
Awesome.
For sure. So my next, the next
well,
one.
Well, Yuval, we'll, challenges. Yeah, we'll get you. We got to go back to the screen share and have, or maybe or just grab one and I want to see it move before we cut out of the video today.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, so. And to be honest, the crap I give you is still based on
the
total admiration of how amazing that King Crab is, right? I'm just like, come on, like we can do this together. We can make those legs.
Yeah. Well, man, when I, I try to use it, you know, Instagram, I mean, to just kind of share and keep the community engaged. But, man, when I dropped this pic, you know, after I talked to you guys and I knew we were going to re-recording, mm-hmm. just kind of spark some interest in BattleTech Lego, man, it exploded. So, Kevin, I think he might be like the most popular Instagram post that I've had or close to it. So yeah, this is a big one.
Yeah, so I think this is my the latest one I've worked on, this BattleTech. I think you might have mentioned earlier, but yeah, I don't only do BattleTech stuff, but I only stick with franchises that I really like. So I've only done Borderlands and BattleTech so far. But this is one of my latest ones. It's also my biggest thing I've ever tried, and I will not do something this big for a while going forward. Because while it was really fun, yeah, just the amount of time sunk into this. As a lot of people this year, I found myself with a little more free time this year. So that worked out well.
Yeah.
And like I said earlier, for me, it's mostly all about the visuals. With one of the things that I've kind of taken when I'm looking at like actual Lego builds, as you've all pointed out earlier, a lot of times they go with stability over functionality in some of their mech models. So a lot of times their mechs will have locked legs or legs with limited joint movement. Because when you just get this large, not breaking it is a pretty key point. You know, not making the user frustrated is pretty important.
And how big is this? What's the height on this?
So this guy's just a little bit over a foot the base on there. But one of the things that initially drew me to the King Crab to try this out was the thing this does have is the claws can open and close. So they kind of slide down into a closed position.
Yeah,
and then it's something that's pretty easy to include on any mech, right, is a torso twist. You can pose in a bit of a different position, but mostly it's all locked from the legs down.
And how many pieces is in a belt like this?
This one ended up being like 3,500.
Okay.
Like that. So, yeah, if you the sad thing is even though I've made instructions for this, so you can build it if you want yourself. If you go to buy those pieces from BrickLink. It's going to end up being like a $500 purchase. And of course, that'll vary where you're at.
Yeah, that's the funny thing people don't understand, right? Yeah. They're like, hey, can I have instructions? Can I have instructions? It's like, yeah, but
you know,
you could buy this or you could buy like new tires for your car. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I don't like the UCS Star Wars ones are close to that. I mean, they got the Falcon that was like $500 that they came out. Granted, that was like a $5,000. So, you know, like 60% more, but still.
I think that was $800, wasn't it?
Was it 800?
I don't know.
Oh, I think it did start at 800, but it gets, the price goes down with sales and stuff pretty quick once they realize that not everyone wants to buy an $800 Lego set.
Yeah, I just love this when I saw it. I think before this, Kevin, I saw like your Uzi, it might've been on Flickr. I can't remember, but like, to me, King Crab is like, you know, it sounds cliche, but it's such like a classic mech to me. Like, I remember when I got my first King Crab mini and I was like, oh, this is amazing. I can't wait to paint this. Like, I actually remember it. I even remember what it looked like and like hand painting, you know, little chevrons and stuff like that. So, you know, it's just one of the most iconic mechs, really.
Definitely. Yeah, I did my first mechs I did, I started with some of the more classic designs, but I think going forward, I'm going to stick with the new mech redesigns that have been done. I think those were originally done by Piranha Games and have now kind of made their way across the Battletech franchise, both in minis and the other Battletech game. Yeah, just the detail has been brought up to like a modern level, right? Where I think I even heard one of your podcasts you've done before, they're talking about like little toe hooks and stuff they have on the mechs. So like, if you look at this guy's face, right, he has these little toe hooks here and then like right at the chin. All these nice little details that really allow you to transfer it into a Lego mech that has a lot of nice detail to it.
As I was wondering, it's funny.
Some of the older models are a bit more clean in their concept.
Yeah.
I do kind of like the hook kind of thing on my designs too. And then I think I was like, what the hell is towing a mech, right?
Well, it's more like what's a mech towing, right?
Drag other stuff around, right?
Yeah, I guess.
Or sledding. All right,
I guess somebody's off-roading and you climb up 30 feet and attach your cable.
Well, there's a great illustration that DC Bruins did where he has basically a mech kind of connected through a tow cable and pulling another mech out of kind of like a bog, you know, that got stuck. Mm-hmm. And so it's a cool picture. I love, you know, and, you know, for people that follow the gallery 3025, which I've been doing to try to get some kind of new Battletech art out there and support the artist, is you know, anything that's just different from a mech shooting on a battlefield, you know, I'd like to see more. And that's a cool one where, you know, it's basically kind of a mech being used for a more practical purpose of you know, battlefield logistics, because mechs are heavy and the ground can't always support, you know, 50 tons walking over it.
Yeah.
But awesome. So we got, looks like an Uziel here.
Yeah, I just flipped this one up. So actually, this is the one I did before the King Crab. And the different challenge to me with a smaller build is, of course, it takes less pieces, but you need to be more intelligent with the piece use.
Mm-hmm.
Because the granularity is smaller, you kind of have to use it in unique ways to get them to represent the shapes you want.
Right.
And as you get a bit larger, then it's not as hard to do that. But then, there's different challenges coming with being large, not to mention just like the scale of it just blows up intensely. And you start focusing on even smaller details to get right. I've been kind of annoyed when I did this guy, because it took quite a while for me to get some of the things to a place where I liked it. Definitely.
How tall is this one?
This guy is, I think it's under a foot, maybe 9 inches, something like that.
It's
a bit smaller. So.
Definitely a lot less mass than the 100 tonner, you know, the King Crab though. You know, and we did say where for people that, you know, always ask kind of where are the instructions, where can they find those, you know, for each of you?
I personally have, if you like these pictures, have a little tag on the bottom that says Hanson Bricks. If you just Google search that, I got a website that's hansonbricks.com just kind of a gallery for all my work and instructions on there as well.
Excellent.
Yeah, and I don't do actual instructions. I do tutorials instead, right? Okay. Just because the material I make is like original material. Like, I'm actually like thinking of maybe like selling them someday. Mm-hmm. People keep asking me, and I'm like, yeah, maybe that's a cool idea. Just, you know, the work that goes into it, and it's not like I don't build them thinking like, how am I going to sell this? I kind of just build it as an artistic process, right?
Yeah. But
that's why I like to do the tutorial videos. It's like, hey, it took me literally 2 years to figure out how to make these hips not collapse under weight. Here's how you can do it.
Right? Yeah, how you don't have to waste your life.
No, awesome.
Yeah, honestly, because some of that stuff was nuts. Like there's some amazing, like, man, there are amazing builders out there, like truly amazing. And you know, and very, you know, a lot of the techniques though are very, it's like secret society, right? It's like people learn techniques and then they hold on to them. And you have to really strive to figure out or reverse engineer what they've done, or just figure out your own. But in my early days, I was watching like Chubby Bot's videos, and I mean, he's he's like such a sweet guy. He makes tons of videos, tons of build videos. And that's how I came up in learning him and Mishima Productions. And they were definitely doing more like mecha style, like more like Japanese anime mecha style, which isn't necessarily my thing, but lots of learning from there. So I was like, okay, if I'm not going to be like making instructions, how can I give back to the community? Right. So it's like, hey, this is something that took me a long time to figure out. Here's a bootstrap for you, and figure out your own aesthetic, right? Mm-hmm. Like design your own thing out of it.
Yeah, that's the double-edged sword, right, of creativity on the internet. You have so many people that are out there to help be helpful and share and, you know, kind of create a community feeling. Mm-hmm. And on the other hand, you have people that are like, well, I can just steal this and you can't catch me.
Yeah.
And there's definitely some of that that's going on on the Lego side as well. So
the theft is insane. It's funny. So there's a, if you don't know, there's a few different places that you can buy Lego instructions, right? Mm-hmm. So there's a Rebrickable, Moxmaker, a few of these other kind of sites. And you know, the sad thing about all this is the piracy, right? I personally know people who have put instructions on there and, you know, within weeks, you know, like Leppin has made like a clone set or some other clone brand.
And that's probably like, that needs an explanation itself, probably. That's like I think it's a Chinese or somewhere.
Yeah. And Lego and Leppin.
Anything Lego.
Yeah, they've had some legal battles, and I think Lego actually miraculously won that legal battle. It's something to do with Leppin basically, ripping off their sets or their technique, because the actual bricks used to be patented, but they're no longer, which is why you have like, you know, Mega Bloks, and you have Leppin, you have Kobe, you have a bunch of these other the exact same products, but each of these brands has their own style. Like Kobe does a lot of military models, like World War II tanks and stuff. But yeah, it is
probably important to point out there, some of these brands do what I would say is fair competition, like Mega Bloks or I don't know what the other one you just mentioned was. Some I would say fair competition, right? They have copied the way the bricks work, but they make unique sets.
Oh yeah,
but there's some companies that shamelessly like. And I see these ads on Facebook all the time. I don't know how they can be there, but like, it'd be like a new Lego car model that's just been released, and they've just ripped it off and they're selling it for like 1/4 of the price.
Yeah. Well, we were talking about the Millennium Falcon. I mean, there was a ripoff Millennium Falcon where they were selling it for like $200 or $100, and it was I think it was that Chinese company, and they basically just kind of taken it, copy the box, copy their art. But international copyright is a quagmire, man.
And especially when it's your mock my own creation, when it's your own creation and it's something you've spent like hundreds of hours on, like all this iteration, and then it's like, okay, yeah, you guys want this, like here's the instructions, and then somebody just rips it off. It's a really depressing state. But that's when you get into these custom companies like Brickmania. Like they just sell their own products, and they're premium, they're expensive, but they make, like, they're all military focused, right? So if you want an original like Sherman tank or like a hovercraft or something, like this Brickmania just has completely their own product line, and you can buy their kits. They don't sell instructions, right? And that's, it's a great idea, and some people have gone there, but even with this idea of Lego digital designer, it's like they'll make a kit for you. There's a lot more logistics involved in, okay, I'm going to be able to accumulate pieces, box them up, package them, ship them out, then, hey, here's a PDF of instructions figured out on your own, right? So yeah, it's good. We're kind of in this funny state where, digitally there's a lot of opportunity, but if you want to actually make any kind of business out of what you're doing, it's a bit spotty.
Yeah, it's interesting. And it's even a lot of it, and I'll follow this up with a question, but for me, and just doing Renegade HG, I'm like hypersensitive to try to give credit where credit is due as much as possible, and kind of give people shout outs and whatnot. I'm always kind of hesitant when I'm using somebody else's creative property of like, is it all right? What's kind of the limits? To those people's credits, like the people who own it are very bad at communicating that. I mean, even, I was having a conversation with Lauren, Coleman over at CGL, and, and even there's, I mean, he's not the lawyer, and the Tops is the lawyer. And so, I mean, there's even, it ultimately it's a lawyer that has no idea of the franchise that's going to make the decisions. And if anyone's met lawyers, lawyers are just risk averse people, you know, it's like, as they're not creative people, you know, and they're certainly not, you know, kind of, you know, fans and immersive, you know, so, you know, lawyers exist to tell you what you can't do. And so it's frustrating having that barrier, because even the people who might own the rights, you know, like CGL in this instance, they may be like, this is great, you know, we love seeing the fans do this, but I don't know if, you know, the Topps lawyers would want to try to do this. And that also, you know, I've learned this through experience, unfortunately, as I've gotten older, is that, you know, the law doesn't matter. The ability to leverage the law is what matters, you know, so it doesn't matter whether you have the rights or not. And Harmony Gold is a great example of this. It doesn't matter that Harmony Gold had the rights or not. Harmony Gold had, you know, big enough legal team to basically, you know, make a, you know, BattleTech and Foss in the day, you know, back off. And ultimately when they met a bigger bully, you know, in PGI, you know, finally that stopped, but that's what it took. It was more about money and not so much about right. But, you know, leverage that into what, as creators there, you know, in LEGO, what can the community do to kind of, you know, properly credit and recognize, you know, or even support you guys and other creators out there, just so that people know, you know, that are enjoying this and maybe want to do it a little on their own. And do it respectfully.
I mean, I think that the main thing that the LEGO community tries to promote, right, is like any kind of modern stuff with just like check your sources. If it's too good to be true, right, if you say this LEGO set is on sale for really cheap,
yeah,
make sure that's really LEGO, right? Don't buy the knockoff stuff if it's blatantly ripping off somebody else's intellectual property. Like, don't purchase it.
Yeah.
And you know, that's, I feel like that goes across plenty of things besides LEGO as well. So just try to be a bit considerate about the stuff you're consuming.
Yeah, it's an interesting community, like especially on Instagram, right? Instagram is such a weird place because, you know, it's such a weird, right? You know, it's such a quagmire of, you know, amazingly creative people and then like just complete fucking garbage, right?
Yeah,
there's your explicit tag, sorry, man. And it's funny because you'll like there's the community is. And when I say the community, it's not like there's a singular community, but you see glimmers of it, right? Because Instagram is such a, like it's immediacy, it's your feed, it's the algorithm, et cetera, et cetera. But you do see, you know, people just posting stories, promoting other people's stuff, and it's so great, right? And I see that more and more. Like, I try to follow people who are not just great builders, but who are great to each other, right? And it's just like, hey, check out this guy, or check out this guy's build, or whatever. And it's just, it's so awesome. And I've actually been trying to do some community building activities. I had last year I did a contest where I put in some of my own money and I was like, build the most beautiful mech leg you can. And there'll be a first, second, and third place winner. Cause I know, for whatever reason, I'm obsessed with the legs on mechs. And it was cool. It brought the community together. Like I had entrants from like Malaysia, UK, like North America. And it was awesome. Right. And that's the positive side. And on the negative side, you know, because it's such this quagmire, you see like a lot of, not a lot, but there are some of these aggregators who just post other people's work with no credit. And I've actually posted, oh, hey, this belongs to X, and I'll mention them, and they delete my comments, right?
Oh,
and then,
wow.
Yeah, like it's brutal.
So and then, it's not just ignorance, it's deliberate.
No, it's willful, like trying to make themselves a product by like showing people all this cool stuff that's not theirs, right? And I said, what are you even doing? Like, what are you getting out of this? So, you know, you see people talk about it every once in a while and report it, but you know, it's big tech. There's only so much you can do. They don't really, you know, care that much when it comes down to, you know, buddy over here has ripped off buddy over here is Lego. They're like, that's not important to us, right?
Yeah.
I don't even know how you play. Like, we're talking about one community out of so many communities on Instagram. It's just got to be an impossible task.
Instagram's so weird. I mean, I don't know if you guys feel this, you know, just because, you know, we're in a similar generation. I'm 40 myself, you know, and it's just, it's such a alien, you know, medium to what we grew up with. And for me, every time I post something on Instagram that I didn't fully create, there's like a little tinge of like, am I exploiting, you know, this other person? You know, if I, you know, post Kevin's, you know, King Crab, am I exploiting Kevin's creative talent to get attention on Instagram? And, you know, I kind of balance that with, you know, I'm trying to share stuff with the community and get the word out about BattleTech, you know, and I'm like super obsessive about giving full credit. And I try to kind of, you know, people have Patreons, I'll throw the Patreon link, but there's still a sense of like, you know, oh, I'm sharing somebody else's picture, you know, but I think that, you know, I hope it drives more attention to you guys, which is ultimately the goal.
Yeah, it's all about intent, you know, right? There's nothing greater than being able to, you know, just point people to something that's beautiful so they can enjoy that beauty and then give that person credit and you know, help motivate that person to create more beautiful things, right? So I think it's all about intent, and you see it. You see both flavors, right? But yeah, before Instagram, it's like I was on Flickr, right? And we're, you know, like Kevin and I are both on Flickr. And that's a funny site too, because like way back in the day, I used to do a lot of photography on Flickr. And when I think back to how it was that many years ago, it basically hasn't changed, right? And it's too bad because, you know, you go there and you have a much more engaged, like, creative community, because it's a community of creative people, you know, sharing each other's stuff. So, you know, when you would get a comment, it would be a fairly meaningful comment. Be like, oh, hey, I didn't like this because of X, or I did like this because of X, like creative criticism, right? But they never, like, Flickr just kind of stayed stagnant. They never broke out into, you know, anything that is, you know, either in the general space or socially. They do have an app, but, you know, it still feels like a website made, you know, 10 years ago, right? And the thing I always say with other creators on Instagram is, man, I wish that there was an Instagram just for, like, creative work, whether it's miniatures, painting, Lego, music, because it's just, again, it just gets lost in the quagmire. And it's so unfortunate, because if there was a slightly more focused version, I just think it would be, you know, better for everybody.
Yeah. And the algorithm is frustrating too when it's all combined. I mean, I'll flick in there and I'll just like, wow, that's a hot cosplayer. And I'll like look at the picture, and then all of a sudden I get flooded with, like, you know, questionable material, because I, you know, clicked on someone who's like in a hot, you know, I don't know, Chun-Li costume or whatever. I haven't seen Chun-Li in like 20 years. But yeah, and it's the algorithm is just really annoying with this stuff. I was like, no, dude, I want to see mechs. It's like, show me some good mech artwork. But yeah, well, coming back, you know, in the Legos, you know, what's, you know, for those that kind of want to dive in, you know, maybe some kind of like early starting tips, you know, what are things that you wish you had known kind of, you know, in the beginning of your kind of building career, you know, both in terms of maybe, you know, we talked a little bit about acquiring, you know, we've talked about the websites kind of where people can buy individual bricks, but what is like the easiest, cheapest, you know, most effective way to kind of get in? Let's say you have either just a couple sets that have been sitting around for a decade or two, or you just come in and scratch and like, this looks, you know, I like these pictures, I want to give it a shot. You know, what are those tips?
So I mean, yeah, I would hands down point people towards BrickLink and their editor. Just mess around with it. You can kind of, they've almost achieved that dream of what Lego was trying to do years back, where if you build something in the editor, you can then upload that all to the BrickLink marketplace, they have the automated process where it can select vendors for you and put together a whole order. It will come from like 8 different people.
Yeah.
Because it has to like pick through all these stores. BrickLink, by the way, is basically like an eBay that only sells individual Lego pieces. So you go to somebody's store and they have 8,000 pieces available. And, you know, you can basically virtually pick through their Lego bins and see what they have, or you can use this automated process to have it buy everything you need for you. Yeah, it's really just like start trying out some stuff, get involved like on somewhere that does do social media, like Facebook has a bunch of groups or Instagram like we're on. But one of the great things about getting started is there is a lot of depth to Lego and different techniques to use. So you can just start building up a lot of those just by looking at what other people have done creatively. There's another site called The Brothers Brick, and they do like 4 shares a day of Lego creations, and they specifically focus on creations that somehow are inspiring. They had unusual part usage or color or something you haven't seen before. So they're always like a great place to go for inspirational content.
Do you think that the BrickLink is the best way, like if someone has 0 Legos in the collection, just to kind of, you know, go there, you know, or is it like find someone on Craigslist that is selling like, you know, a dozen sets and just pick them up cheap? Like what's, you know, and that's another thing. Lego is not cheap. I know when I got into Star Wars Lego, I quickly realized that Star Wars Lego was also an investment, you know, and then bought some. And essentially, I mean, I think I probably bought a couple $1,000 worth of Star Wars Lego, and I sold it at a profit, you know, years later, you know, probably 20-30% profit, you know. So, but in that sense, it's hard to kind of get a cheap intro into it, you know. So is there like a way that you guys recommend if people just pick up a large volume of bricks to start going into?
You know, I'd actually suggest like, like if you're really fresh, like check out the Lego catalog and maybe just buy like one or two sets. It doesn't have to be anything crazy because, you know, it's even, you know, at the kind of like the advanced technique level that Kim and I are at, sometimes, you know, I'll look at how Lego has built something on an official set. I'm like, oh, that's super clever, right? And because I'm so much about like the function, I would say that, you know, pick up just something that looks interesting and just build it, like feel it with your hands, like move it around and see, okay, this is how this thing can move. This is the kind of clearance you're going to get out of this. This is how much like weight bearing it has, right? And then just like, and the thing we didn't mention actually is Lego has all of the instructions for all of their sets available as PDFs on their website. So if you pick up something to just kind of get a feel for it and they're like, oh, but I like these other ones too. Just search the, you know, Lego 601, whatever instructions, and you'll find it on their website and you can actually look through it and see how they've built it, which is really informative. Cause again, it's going to be simpler, but you know, the techniques that are built for structural integrity. Right. And then just like, watch a ton of YouTube, like watch Chubby Watts videos. Like if you want to build something heavy, like watch my videos. Like there's a ton of guys on Instagram that have YouTubes that are doing stuff, and you know, just try it out. And yeah, like Studio is awesome for iteration. I just think I would say that if you're starting out, it may not give you that sense of structural integrity that you may need to be thinking about if you actually wanted to build it.
Yeah, if we could just give a shout out to Lego as a company, is like, man, those guys are like the epitome of, you know, what a corporation should be, you know, from what I know, you know, of Lego. They're just like, they're the right balance of having an amazing product, making lots of money off of it, and being extremely open, you know, to the community. You know, that's my impression as a casual Lego guy, but I don't know if that translates to you guys.
With anything.
Just like, yeah.
You're going to find people that can nitpick here and there, but yeah, as far as a corporation goes, yeah, absolutely. As a corporation that's like stuck to core values while still being crazy successful, it's hard to find. Yes. You feel like a lot of companies end up feeling a bit like sellouts at some point.
Yeah. Yeah. They definitely seem that. I mean, the fact that they're not public probably has something to do with it, but yeah, that's a good decision there.
Real quick on just to follow up what you all said. Yeah. Like looking through instructions, it's so ridiculous, but I basically feel like Lego's almost, for people who know how some of the pieces go together, it's almost like they give away every set for free. Like I just read the instructions and in my mind I'm building it, right? Like you can basically build any Lego set if you just look through the instructions and watch the techniques they use. But one other thing just about like getting into it, especially like Lego is expensive, but digital, while it does have the downside, right, that it's not going to give you the physical realities of Lego, it's entirely free. Like the editor is absolutely free. And there is a built-in render option. There's plenty of people that just build digitally, just render it out, share their work online, and that's it. They never even build it physically. Now for like what we do, like where it's mechs that have all these crazy physical considerations, that's kind of a crappy way to do it. But if you want to build something that's more stable, like a car or buildings or landscapes, that kind of stuff, you can get much more of a feeling for just within a digital space.
Yeah. And to be clear, like Studio has become an essential tool for me. It's not like I'm against it in any way. Like I do a ton of iteration there. Actually, that one mech I showed you with the lights is the first mech, the upper torso anyways, that I designed from the beginning in Studio. Typically I'll start with a sketch, but typically I'll go from a sketch to a physical build, a noodle a bit, and then I'll bring it into digital. But that was the first one I did fully digital. It was really cool. And it's fast, right? And I mean, you know, when you don't feel like hunching over a desk or you don't feel like spending thousands of dollars on pieces, you can do it at your couch. Like it's awesome, right?
Just want to work for an hour and not plot all the pieces.
Yeah, yeah. And like, that's exactly what I did last night. I just like fiddling with this lower torso. It's like, I don't want to be hunched over, right? But yeah, I use a lot of, it's a part called a rotation disc, and like I have a lot of double joints on things, and that's when you're going to start to want to punch yourself in the face, because you know Studio, once you start getting into you know, pivoting, and because it's not a CAD program, so it's not an engineering program, it's basically a drawing program with Lego bricks. So if you have part one attached to part two and you move part one, it's not gonna move part two in tandem, right? So you know, when you get into, you know, like anything that's kind of like a, like I have these, you know, friction tubes, basically hydraulic pistons on the back of the legs, you know, if you want to change the inclination of that leg, you're moving seven parts and you're probably punching yourself in the face along the way, because it's not really, it's not really designed for that kind of, you know.
Which is kind of surprising, yeah, given the kind of people that build Lego and how enormous the community is, that someone hasn't been like, all right, let's make an engineering program out of this. It'll maybe come in some time. There's so many people that build those just free builders in general and for anything. It's seems like it's inevitable that somebody will dive in if they have that right combination of skills. Well, what's an example of kind of like a common problem, you know, that you see beginners have that you guys can kind of throw out, either finding a joint to work, or, you know, getting that weight bearing, you know, what are some kind of common errors that you see for new builders that you guys can kind of say, from your experience, do this instead?
I think probably the biggest thing I see new people do wrong, and it's just the things that I've done wrong in the past, is the first thing that I always focus on now is proportion. Like, the first thing you want to do is basically get a block out of whatever you want to build together, especially if you're building on something that's already been designed or it already exists, like within another IP. Like, just don't worry about necessarily like how each part looks. Just get it built out so you know, okay, the arm, I need that to be like three studs wide. And you get the whole thing built out. You match those proportions up to the reference material. And then once you get to that point, then you can go back to that arm and go, cool, now what can I do within a three stud limit to match the visuals that are there on that model. And I have, like, in the first mech I built, which that was the Ryokan. I got too focused on certain parts first. I had stuff just how I wanted it, and then I'd look at it and be like, oh, the whole thing's too big in this section. And then all that work you've done is scrap, because yeah, you need to cut that down to only like two studs wide rather than four or something.
Yeah.
You have to use completely different pieces to achieve what you're going after there.
Yeah, that makes total sense.
Yeah. And I guess, if you're just starting out, like, don't go crazy on scale, right? Like I kind of started big because I was stupid, and I figured out a lot of things along the way, and it took me a long time to figure that out. It was cool. It was fun to learn. But, you know, if you just want to build something, you know, you don't need to start at minifig scale. If you want to build like a locust, like I've seen, there's somebody on Instagram, I think his name is like Mockbay, kind of like Mechbay, M-O-C. Mm. He builds micro scale mechs. They're like, probably
I've
like
seen those, yeah
like a few inches tall, and you know, probably like 50 to 100 parts each, and he captures an amazing amount of detail on there. I think he's done like a Marauder, he's done a Locust, I can't remember what else, you know. And then like I love building a minifig scale, because I like world building, and I feel like my minifigs are the little people in the world. So mm-hmm. You know, it's an achievement to me to be able to, you know, if I'm making a vehicle like this APC I made recently, it's like I worked really hard, iterated really hard to fit 10 people in there while keeping it compact, while keeping it actually, if you do like Lego, the scale is variable. Some people do anywhere from like 1/32nd to 1/48th. But basically, if this thing, you know, if you scaled up this weird little minifig, who would be like extremely obese if you did that. But, you know, the vehicle size makes sense, right? So it's cool, but you don't have to start there, because once you get big, you're going to have a lot of considerations, right? That thing is going to tip over. It's going to be expensive. It's going to cost a lot of parts. And there's this funny middle ground, actually, like this, the scale I build at is almost the worst, because it's heavy enough that you need to compensate, but it's not large enough that you can use some of the more the Lego Technic parts, okay, right? You know, like they have, you know, a lot of different turntables and linear actuators and these parts that are really like support a ton of weight. So you see a few folks like Lego Dark Knight who will make like a Chappie or something that's like 4 feet tall. And it's amazing, right? And the engineering that goes into that is amazing. And not to diminish that at all, but you know, you also get some of those Technic structures that are, you know, built for more weight. So I would say, think about the scale you want to build up that's actually going to make you happy, and that's going to give you the detail that makes you happy.
Now, do you guys have, what's your favorite like official Lego set? What's one that kind of stands out as a favorite build, you know, from the official line, or you know, maybe both a favorite and one that you kind of recommend as a good set to get people into it?
If I had to pick, maybe a recent one I really enjoyed was they made a Harley model about 2 years ago, I think. And my family is really into Harleys. I'm personally not, so there's some family connection there. But the larger vehicles that LEGO does have a lot of really interesting techniques in them that I've snatched, you know, using on my mechs. Even though they're not mechs, they have quite a bit of complexity to them. Actually, for a recommendation, there's like a Speed Champions line of these little cars that LEGO does. I think they're like 6 or 8 studs wide. And they initially look really simple, but it's, again, because they're on a small scale, they twist and use the bricks in a lot of unconventional methods to achieve the shapes they want in those. So generally, each one of those builds that I've looked at, they always have some new, like, whoa, I've never thought about using that part like that. Okay. So they're actually like really cheap compared to like a lot of LEGO sets, but they still have a lot of really cool connections in those.
Awesome.
Yeah, and you know, that goes back even to the like things to think about when you're starting is like the stuff Kevin's talking about. It's called snots. That's not on top, right? Because, you know, when you think of LEGO bricks, you think of this block, right? But, you know, when you're getting into the beautiful design, you're using, you know, different techniques to you know, maybe you're not building studs up at all. I often build my mech torso studs forward just because the shape of the pieces I find lend themselves to just a more dynamic shape when your bricks are pointing forward rather than up, which sounds really arbitrary if you don't know what I'm talking about. But then there's like bricks with studs on the front, and then there's joints, and you can use all these things in different ways to create angles and to create these beautiful things. And yeah, the Speed Champions have a lot of really interesting, really compact snot going on. Of all the things that's been my favorite set in the last couple of years, there's a school bus, the LEGO Hidden Side.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I can't remember what the actual name of it is, but it's a school bus. And the reason I love it is, like, it is truly, again, like, this is my bias, is it's minifig scale. Like, they have truly made a school bus, because often you'll buy a LEGO car and it's like, you know, you're fitting one person in there and you're thinking, this would look ridiculous in real life. But this bus is, like, it's massive on a LEGO scale. And it's just, the way it's built is really simple, but at the same time, beautifully captures the lines. So that's cool. But I mean, honestly, my dream, and we're starting to see movement in LEGO a little bit, is that they do another unbranded sci-fi setting, right? Like, it's interesting. They've been doing, you know, they did that blacksmith set recently on LEGO Ideas. They have another castle set coming out on a creator kit. And they put out this poll for their 90th something.
Yeah, it's some anniversary. I can't remember.
And basically giving the community the option to pick the theme of the next idea set they're going to do, or the next really special ideas set or collector set. And the two top runners, I think, are Classic Space and Castle, because these are the things that, like, they captured my imagination as a kid. And I look at pictures of them now and I immediately go back to those times. And I was building mocks out of them when I was like 10 years old, right? And it's just like this just unbranded, just, you know, imagination rich kind of stuff. I'd love to see them do that again. And they've done bits and pieces, but I don't know if they ever will, because I think the branded stuff is actually how they clawed their way out of bankruptcy, was to start doing the branded lines, right? So sure. So it's hard to dismiss that.
Right. Gosh, I remember you mentioned the castles. That was my favorite as a kid. And I had lost that memory until you just mentioned it. And I just kind of vaguely was like, castles. Yes, I did. I loved building the castles when I was little. And it's weird. I talk about this with my girlfriend all the time. I have very odd memory, very bad memory. Like, I remember very little from my childhood before like 11, 10 years old, you know, and even 10 as a stretch. But yeah, I do remember tons buying those castle sets and building them and loving them. That was about the time where, you know, Willow was my favorite movie, which we just picked up and watched a couple months ago again, now that came out on Blu-ray. But very cool.
Yeah, the space sets, the monorails, the little bases, like, it was just so much fun. The little crater plates, it's just awesome.
yeah, the cool thing now, right, is like they're gonna be able to sell these new sets based upon the nostalgia that people like us have from our childhood. Yeah. That's why those work now, and that's why they're gonna sell really well. Yeah. You know, Lego's actively said they're gonna be making bigger pushes to sell to the adult market.
Yeah.
Just because it's
and it's funny because
really pushed so far.
Yeah, they've really been resisting it. Hey, and I mean one of the main acronyms like AFOL, Adult Fan of Lego. Like, it's a thing, right? Most of the people making these mocks, most of the people like doing the really creative stuff are like people like us who we grew up with it as a kid for whatever reason, we got back into it, found it as a medium and love it. And it's funny, like, it's just, you know, I kind of compare it with, I don't know, the only comparison I can think of right now is like D&D, right? Is like playing D&D as a kid, you see that like D&D and other RPGs or other war games, whether it's BattleTech, whether it's Warhammer or whatever, very clearly understand that they have an adult market and, you know, we'll tailor products to it. And for whatever reason, like, yeah, Lego has like advanced sets and they have, you know, like high cost sets and stuff, but it seems like, you know, the price point and the complexity may be targeted at adults, but thematically it's still, you know, relive your childhood, right? They're really scared to get into that, you know, the more of those adult themes. And not to say they need to go like super violent, like Mega Bloks has like Call of Duty and Halo and stuff like that, you know, like video game based franchises, and they don't need to go there, but you know, it would be great to see, you know, a bit of an actual like mature line of Lego, as weird as that sounds, right?
It does seem, they certainly have like the landmarks and stuff seem very, very beautiful and definitely more adult oriented, the ones that I've seen at least.
They do, they have like the architecture series is, I would say, like probably their most adult oriented, and they have a lot of lines of realistic world vehicles. But yeah, I think it's really about really pushing that marketing and really leaning into that side. But yeah, it'd be great to see them do.
Yeah. And you know what, maybe they just never will, because I mean, they don't really have to, right? Because we're doing it for them, right? I mean, they produce the product, you know, they keep people interested in the general market. And then you have folks who can take that product and reshape it into something different without them having to do it themselves. So maybe they're doing exactly, you know, what they should be doing.
What, you all, you know, kind of for me, my little one is 4 years old, coming up on 5 and 2 months. You know, what have you found for kind of getting the kids involved? And, you know, what ages are they good? Whether you're stepping stones? Because I got her first Lego set around where she turned 4. It was still a little, she was still a little young to not to build, but to like not lose all the pieces. Mm-hmm. And she's also in the stage where hide everything, you know, put it everywhere. And so it's like, well, we can't hide all the Lego pieces. I don't know how old yours are specifically, but you have any sense as a parent in terms of what age is good to get them involved?
Yeah, I've got a 4-year-old and a 7-year-old. And it's funny, like, you know, you want your kids to be interested in what they're interested in, but you also want them to be interested in what you're interested
in. Yeah.
And so far, my endeavors have not been super fruitful. But like when I think back to how this started, it was with that you know, ridiculous Lego friend set of like these two girls and a pony and something. And I'm like, screw that. Let's build a castle. Let's build something awesome, right? So yeah, I don't know. I think just, you know, just especially if you're somebody who's, you know, obsessive about the details like we are, you have to let that go, right? It's like, if you want to build them like the most beautiful castle or something so they can play with, they're probably not going to be interested. They just want to stack bricks, right? They want to make whatever they want to make, and it is what it is. But yeah, I haven't quite got to the point where they're like, it's funny actually, we watched the second Lego movie for like the 100th time the other day, and my youngest went straight to her Lego table and started building something. And it was just so cool to see that immediate, like, oh, I just watched this movie, and you can see like the inspiration like bubbling up in this 4-year-old. And then she like made like a pyramid or something. It was so cool. So, you know, just give them parts and play with them with it.
Yeah. Right? My strategy has been, don't like introduce them to it, just do it a lot around them or play with them and then let them come. Like I'm a huge Star Wars fan, and my Star Wars, like, it was imperative for me that my little girl loves Star Wars, and and it's like it'd break my heart if she didn't. I'd get over it, but I never forced Star Wars. I just like, you know, I had my toys, and some of her toys were, you know, Chewbacca, C-3PO, you know, Han Solo, whatever, and she played with the toys, and then eventually she asked me, it was like, Daddy, can we watch Star Wars? And I was like, it was like fourth birthday, we're doing it. I was like, it was like a month before her birthday. And I was like, yes, we're going to do it on your birthday. And we watched it, you know, and it wasn't like fall in love. She wants to watch it all the time, but she regularly asks, hey, can we do this? And she loves playing with the Star Wars. And it wasn't like, we got to do this. It was just like, these are some of your toys. And you ask questions and it basically just pretended it was part of normal life. It's like, this is Chewbacca. And my girl's known who Chewbacca was since she was like a year and a half old on R2-D2. And then with Battletech. And another thing I think the collectors have issues with too is they're worried about their toys. And I'm like, Grant, I don't want her to break certain things, but I don't care. You know, if letting them play with it, you know, a miniature or whatnot, or whatever toy, or you know, action figures or whatnot. I'm like, yeah, you know, of course, you know, if you break it, you know, there's eBay, I'll replace it if it's really important. But yeah, with Lego, we do Magna tiles, you know, which I love, which are also expensive. Holy cow.
Yeah,
you know,
those really sets, are. They're crazy.
They really are. I just would build with her all the time. And then it was funny. We started getting stories from when she was at school, and they would come back and like, yeah, she does like these crazy Magna tile structures and all the kids love and circle around and watch her. And I was like, that's amazing. Cause I would just build with her and she would like contribute here or there. And then I would like heard from the third person that she was like taking those skills and doing it and developing them on her own. But yeah, so strategies, parents and strategies.
And honestly, the other thing as well is just building sets, right? Like my older kid loves just the process of building the set. She won't play with it afterwards, but you know, like going through the instructions, figuring it out, putting it together is her joy, right? And there's so much literature on that, like in terms of, you know, specifically building Lego sets, especially during you know, like last year when everybody was going insane, basically the meditative qualities of building a Lego set. There were actually articles on it, you know, because you have a path. You know, you have all the parts, you can follow steps, but still feel like you're being creative and following the steps, and you've completed and you've built this thing, right? So yeah, my older daughter enjoys the building process, whereas the younger one is more of like a free thinker.
Yeah, it's like, it's basically a 3D, like paint by number, essentially, right? Like it's very meditative. Also, I mean, I was the kid that would build the set and it sits there like, I don't know who these kids are that actually play with. that sounds weird. The game of Lego has always been build the set, take the set apart to me. I'm probably the weirdo. In the Lego movie, the first one, I, you know, empathize more with the father than the child.
My kids know not to. It's funny, like talking about breaking toys. It's like we play with a lot of stuff, but they see my Lego desk and they have wide eyes and they know not to mess up, right?
Yeah.
That was gonna be one of my questions, like how do you, like, I don't have kids yet, but I assume at some point I will, and they'll have their Lego and then they'll be dad's Lego.
Yeah.
And how I'm gonna have to make some kind of friendly barrier there.
Yeah, you just like my the one thing I don't let her get into is my books, you know, and it's because I like to collect books, like especially all my Battletech books. I've got every Battletech book printed in like basically near mint condition, except for like one Dark Age book has a little crease on it. And then I have like my reading copies. And, but yeah, I'm like, and I'm one of those guys that kind of like likes my books to look like new. So that's the only thing I've kind of actively steered her away from. But like, we'll sit there and we'll look at the books. Like there's one, going back to Star Wars, there's an absolutely incredible Star Wars pop-up book. And I got it from somebody who was selling it, like, you know, yard sale type thing. It is just amazing. And it's definitely not, you know, you couldn't let a little kid do it because there's the intricacy of the pop-up. It's basically like the level of the Lego intricacies that you're doing in a pop-up book. And I don't even know how they do this.
Some pop-up books are brilliant.
I don't let her do it, but I sit there and like, you know, we'll go through it together all the time and that's it. So yeah, you set your barriers, but it's just constantly remind yourself, like if she breaks that, I can replace it. You know,
yeah.
I was like, hop on eBay.
And you know what's funny, like sidebar, like that's another great reason to use Studio. So for no reason other than to like like immortalize my own personal instructions, I often just digitize things into Studio, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, I might look at something and be like, okay, well, I've had this now for a year, maybe I'll take it apart, but if I want to build it again, I should make my own blueprint for this. So that's another, you know, if you're a custom builder and you do like taking things apart, or you just don't want to, you know, maintain thousands of pieces, it's a great way to just, you know, make your own instructions. And if you want to rebuild it, you'll just rebuild it.
Yeah.
There's no way, like short-term memory, that stuff's gone. Like, I don't remember what process I used to build my older models. Save it somewhere.
That's one thing I wish I could tell myself when I was younger. Because when you're younger, you're like, oh, I'll remember this. I don't need to write this down. God, you idiot. You don't remember anything. It's like, write everything down.
I was just going to ask you, well, like, what is your normal, like, time that it takes to complete a model for you? Because for me, it's stupid. It's like, maybe I'll get it done in a year.
Yeah, it totally depends, right? I mean, like it's funny, like job, family, pandemic. So that means like we haven't had a babysitter in a year now, right?
Right. So
time is like is gold. It's more valuable than gold, right? So sometimes it takes me a long time to build just because I only have small increments to add together. And sometimes it just takes me a long time to build because I'm a slow builder, right? But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think I have this. This is the other funny thing about Instagram, is that you get caught up in this.
Must produce content.
Yeah. You get, it's like, am I producing this because it's my art and it makes me feel fulfilled? Or am I producing this because I feel like I need to keep up with content generation? It's the word content. It's such a dirty word, right? And it's something like, you know, like I've talked to so many great people on Instagram who are like kit bashers, scratch builders, painters, mini painters, like every artistic medium under the sun, and they all feel the same way. It's like, you know, I started off doing this because it was fun, or I'm working on this fiction and, you know, I'm going to do something else with it. And then you start to put it on social media and you get the feedback, which is awesome. But then you feel this, like this pull to produce content. So then it's like, okay, am I going to spend less time on something just so I can make more things? And it's really tough. So yeah. And in terms of the actual time, like I've had, you know, my larger mechs take me maybe like a couple months. You know, on a good day, maybe it'll come together faster. But there's so much iteration in that. Like I'm obsessive on details. So it's like, maybe I want a stud showing here because it looks like a rivet, but I don't want a stud showing here. So I'm just gonna pull the whole thing apart and redesign it, right? So it takes time. I really appreciate that it takes you the time it takes to make your models, because like you have so like remarkably reproduce them. Like the King Crab is a beautiful work of art, right? And it's, I love that you have, and also your Borderlands, what's it called? The Runner? I can't remember what that
vehicle
is. You know, when I saw that, I was like, holy shit. Like he's just captured, like truly captured it, right? In this other medium, using parts that you would not, that are generic parts, that are made to not be generic, right? So I really appreciate the time that goes into those.
I think one thing you hit on there, and it's another one of my like probably like tips I'd tell people, is like if I get a piece done, you mentioned iteration. Iteration is so key, especially in any like creative industry. You want to get it to a stage and like, all right, how can I make it better? How can I make it better? How can I make it better? And even if I get it to a place sometimes where I think like, oh, that works. Like, no, try two or three other things, because then like, oh, that one's even better. Like if you stop with the first solution you find, a lot of times that's not the best solution you can find. So going back to video games, like my day job with that, like everything is iterated on. And my God, like 10% of the content I make maybe makes it into a final game. Like, so it's all try stuff, throw it away, try it again, throw it away. Like, you know, especially like concept artists, you can see in their work, they draw 10 things, you pick one of them and you go forward with it. Like it's a lot of exploration and taking the best thing and doing something with it.
And the other thing I'll say, it's pretty specific, but it's something I've definitely found. And this is where I struggle a bit with like tactile versus digital, is I almost always find that like when I'm building something let's say I've built it a little bit, then I went and did more in digital, and I'm like, okay, I'm going to start iterating on it at my desk again. I almost always find that if I'm missing parts, I come up with a more creative solution for having not had all the parts I could possibly have. So that is something I find that I lose when I'm purely in digital, because you have the world of parts. You can build whatever you want. But when you actually, like when you have the necessity, you'll invent, right? And sometimes the creative solutions you get out of that are a lot more interesting than what you thought was the perfect solution because you had access to every part.
Yeah, I love that. That actually just, I have a YouTube channel where I talk about, you know, my profession in terms of rowing and coaching and training methodology. And that just made me think that a lot of people try to get their training methodology from the elite coaches and whatnot. And a lot of it's not good, you know, and it certainly doesn't translate to non-elite populations, and I would also say that it's not probably ideal for elite athletes or in rowing at least. But that's a very interesting insight there, Yuval, in terms of like those people that coach those that are all, have always been coaching D1 athletes or elite athletes. Like they've never been forced to innovate their training because they are just gifted with, you know, insanely talented, you know, athletes and bodies to work with. But I'm going to make a video of that. We're going to talk about that. That's going to be a good one. But very cool. I like that. And I like what you're saying, you know, in the terms of the creative content too. And I resist that. And I mean, anybody who's kind of does creative content, you get that lure of like views and whatnot. And I remember I did that. I did like an unboxing video for the new CDL minis. And I was mainly interested in comparing the scale to the other ones. And so I did a video and I just did like the Urban Mech and cause it was one mech and I had fun doing it. It was actually one of the easiest videos I made to kind of edit. But people loved it. And I was getting all kinds of comments. And I was like, oh, I'll do this again. I think it was like probably my most viewed video other than like maybe a Michael Stackpole interview or something up to that point. I was like, oh, I'll do it again. And I did the next one and I still had fun with it. And then I was like, oh man. And that one blew up. And then I was like, oh, I'll do another one. And by the third one, I was like, dude, this is boring. Like I'm pulling up many, like I'm not an unboxing video kind of guy, you know, watching and now producing. And I was like, all right, I got three. I'm not doing this anymore, even though it's like my most viewed videos on the channel. I was just like, yeah, I'm just producing content to produce content. I'm not like doing the stuff I enjoy at this point. But yeah, it's a tough trap to get in. You got to pull yourself out, you know, when you feel yourself falling in. But what's coming up? What's the kind of pie in the sky builds, you know, for you guys, or what's kind of on the building table that we're going to see next?
Well, I saw the catapult. I know it's coming.
Yeah, I can share that real quick. So I get a lot of, well, to go back a bit before that. So when I first started building mechs, I didn't know that it would be successful. So what I started with was mechs that I thought hadn't been represented well before. And brick. So the first one I chose was a classic build of Ryokan or Stormcrow.
Okay.
Because I didn't feel like there had been a MechWarrior 4 version of the head ton. You know, we're getting very specific here. But a MechWarrior 4 version looks different than like what was seen in the original source books. Mm-hmm. So I did an original source book version of that. Obviously, like some of my builds have gotten some pretty good feedback so far. To the point now where I'm like, okay, I should start building the mechs that have been done before, but I'm going to try to see if I can do something that I think turns out better, or perhaps of the new game builds. Give me just a second here. But then on top of that, right, like I get tons of repeating requests. And one of them, as Yuval pointed out, is like, oh, I wish it articulated. So that's one of the things I'm going to try in my next build. The other thing I get quite a lot is like, does a minifig fit inside? And I'm like, no, because I already have so much to consider. I don't like, say, for example, on the King Crab, getting all the face plating on that to look correct was so complicated already. Like I used all that space, to get those right. There's no space for a cockpit anymore.
And if you made a King Crab at a minifig scale, it would probably be like, you know, 20,000 pieces, right?
Yeah, like who knows?
It's like, not a small mech.
Also, minifig scale, even like official Legos is fuzzy term, right? Like the Star Wars that you buy, they fit inside.
Yeah,
they
don't fit inside,
right? Like, they're not scaled to real people. They're still a product that's built upon like viability of
right.
the parts that cost a lot.
Yeah, maybe the $800 one, you know, is the scale, but the rest, the $100 ones are definitely not.
Anyway, yeah, so what I just shared here is, like, basically this is what I call, like, my blockout phase of my next model. I'm trying to go for a catapult, trying to keep all the joints on the legs articulating. So in a fashion, like how Yobol's models work, where you can pose them in different ways. None of this is done yet. This is part of my process here where basically, like I said earlier, the first thing I do is just about proportion. So this, what you're seeing here, is total BS build that's done in the virtual editor, BrickLink's editor. None of these pieces, you couldn't build this right now. The pieces are in places where they're on the grid where I know I'll be able to go back later and make a structure that works. But most of this is me just getting the shape right. And so, yeah, I'll build a little bit. I'll take a 2D screenshot of it. I'll compare that against some source material. Take a, like basically in like Photoshop, overlay it and make one of them opaque so you can see through and see how well your proportions match up. So it's like, if you don't work on the proportions early, it can be death by a thousand cuts. For example, if you look between 2 and 3 here, you probably can't notice it, but between 2 and 3, I've actually scaled down. Oh God, is it 2 and 3? Maybe it's 3 and 4. It's 3 and 4. I've scaled down the missile pods because they're actually one grid too large in each direction. And it's small stuff like that you'll never catch when you're eyeballing. So you got to like line it up with the source material and see how it actually shakes out.
Or yeah, so you can see the difference on this. Yeah. Yeah, you can see the side of the missile pod. You can see that difference.
So yeah, this is next for me, trying a few new things.
Awesome.
So this
will allow a minifigure in it?
Yeah, it's hard to see, but if you actually like blew up on the cockpit, like on number 4, there's a little, you can see a little figure sitting there right now that I've put him inside already just to make sure that I don't take up too much space building the plates and stuff.
So. Awesome. All right, 2022, it'll be ready. You know, you guys said you took a year, Kevin, and Yobol, you said you took months, but that doesn't really tell us much because it doesn't tell you how many days and how many hours you're building. Yeah, so, yeah. You know, what's more of the hour? You know, if you guys had an hour estimate, that would be more informative in terms of how much.
And, you know, I can speak to it more with vehicles. I've been doing vehicle design lately. Mm-hmm. And I find that, you know, it's a cliche thing, but if you can find the time to get into a flow, like if you can find, you know, blocks of like, however, whatever your blockage is, some people can like be super efficient in an hour. I find like it's almost like I don't spin up until after like 2 hours. So if like a 3 hour block to work on something, I can get a ton done. And like my latest vehicle, probably like when I just got down to the building of it, only probably took like 10 to 20 hours. You know, there was iteration in there as well, but it's hard, right? It's hard to put actual time on there.
Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah. I'd have to actually start recording because the thing that you talked about earlier was like, try not to make it become a job, right? Like if at some point you're not enjoying it, like why am I even doing this anymore? And it can be Instagram telling you need content to be done, or it can even just be like being a creative. Sometimes you feel like you're wasting your time if you're not constantly making something. You're like, oh, I sat around and watched a movie tonight. Was that a good use of my time? Like,
yeah.
You start kind of having those thoughts. But yeah, when I say a year, that's like me. Okay, if I get into a video game or decide to play Battletech again, like I don't try to fight that too hard. I just kind of, you know, enjoy what I'm doing as much as possible. Like there's times when I'm working on Lego. I'm like, I hate this, but I want to do this today because I need to get a solution for this. I'm not having fun stressing out about it. But, you know, at some point, right, like it's not like a year of using all my free time for Lego. That would just be,
be crazy.
Insane. Yeah.
Yeah. So Yobol, what's kind of coming up for you?
I'm doing a lot of iteration right now. So like some of the first mechs I built were my Sisterhood mechs. So I was still learning at that time. Mm-hmm. So I'm actually going back to some of them and applying lessons I learned later. Because again, like I'm also in tech. So for me, like rewriting code 100 times over is natural, right? Until it's becoming this perfect little diamond. So, I'm going back to a lot of my older builds that I really enjoy, but have, you know, either they were, you know, I found that a lot of my Sisterhood mechs, the black ones, the lower torso is just oversized compared to the upper torso. So, you know, I'm going back, okay, how can I scale this to be more proportionate and also, you know, leverage some of the strength in there and maybe even just apply some of my new aesthetic, you know, designs to it. And the other thing I'm trying to do is write more. So, I mean, part of the reason I'm doing all of this is to reboot that original, you know, that original D&D setting I published, right? Dark Legacies. So, you know, I am hoping to, you know, do a novel at some point and maybe other mediums. So everything I build has backstory, and I'm trying to, again, in this battle between content creation and your art, I'm trying to tell myself, okay, maybe it's okay to spend a bit more time just writing, and it's okay if you don't build something every week.
Yeah.
Actually, a question on that, like, what is your early, like, concept process for your designs? Because obviously they're all original to you. How long do you spend on that? Like you said, you do sketches.
Yeah, and I'm not an illustrator by any measure, but no matter what, like, even if my sketch looks like something my kids drew, it's amazing the difference it makes. So yeah, so, you know, sometimes I'll have a concept just pop into my head. Sometimes, you know, I look at a lot of concept art and I'm like, oh yeah, this is kind of giving me an idea for something. And honestly, I'm constantly looking through my old technical readouts. I'm like, I still love the Locust. It's like, you know, or I actually, one of my mechs, the, which one is it? The Redeemer is actually based off of a rifleman, but you wouldn't really know, because by the time, like, I look at like a rendition, like I found this rendition that I really liked. The Rifleman's been through so many revisions, and I started sketching something, and then my sketch becomes something different, probably because I'm really bad at sketching. And I'm like, okay, yeah, what if it looked like this? And then I start to build it, and it looks even more different. So there is a source material in there, but by the time it's done, it's usually completely different. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, like my Metatron, that one I showed with the lights, that was a completely original build based off of really nothing. And it kind of just... I don't know. There's an aesthetic there. Cause I mean, if they are, you know, they're, like I said, that's the faction that still has AI. So I was like, okay, if this is a mech that is still piloted by an AI, I want to give it more, I want it to look more like a being, right? I want to anthropomorphize it a bit so that it looks more like a living thing rather than a piloted thing. And then I was like, okay, well, so maybe you should almost have this like protruding, like head type structure. And then I do, I only really do, like chicken walkers, you know,
those and are the best kind.
Yeah. So, you know, so sometimes there's bird type quality. So I'd spend a lot of time looking at the anatomy of like ostriches and emus and other big birds and stuff. And then I look at the shapes of their bodies and how they work. And yeah, it's kind of just comes together.
Now, have you considered doing a canon battle mech?
No. You know, I don't feel the need to, honestly, like, yeah, I don't feel the need to, because I can love something without having to try to reproduce it. And honestly, like, why would I make a king crab when Kevin's is perfect, right?
Like, well, honestly, yeah, well, yeah, you know? there's another one.
So if he makes a locust, like, my life will be complete, right? Because the locust will always be my first and forever love when it comes to battle mechs, right? But no, for me, it's truly about world building, which is why I'm also doing a lot of vehicle design. I might actually get into some base design or some more vignettes this year to kind of show off the world. But yeah, I don't think so.
What's your favorite locust illustration?
What's my favorite one?
Yeah. Yours.
You know, I don't know about my favorite one, but I remember the first time I saw the 2C.
Okay.
I was like, what the hell is this? Because everything was looking super anime, right?
Yeah.
like, this is weird. Its legs are all tilted. They're really skinny. So I don't know about my favorite one, but I remember that being the most like mind-boggling.
Yeah, the 2Cs, all those Victor Musical Industries, I think it is. But I've been doing a lot of my custom CCG cards, and I was actually just looking at the Locust 2C the other day. But those are some sharp illustrations. It's interesting. I don't know exactly the backstory, the legal backstory on those. You know, maybe next time I talk to Scroggins or something, I'll have to ask him what the deal is with that. But I get the sense that they can't really use those designs too much, which seems weird because they were made specifically for Battletech. But
and yeah, and it's funny because ironically they look kind of like they were made from a cross, right?
So yeah, totally. Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, a bit of a tangent, but yeah, with there, it just seems to be such a mess with sharing stuff sometimes. I think that's hands down the part I enjoy least. Is when I get a model finished, having to go share it and promote it and all that stuff that you do with your finished creative content. Like,
yeah,
I wish somebody would do that.
Yeah. Well, that's another thing with the artists too. I try to do it for them. And I like with the artists that I talk to a lot, I was like, I know I hate promoting myself. You hate promoting yourself, but I'm happy to promote you. So like, I'll do it, you know? So I've done that with Bruins. Like I love Bruins' work. Bruins doesn't want to self-promote, you know, it's like, he just wants to be an artist and work. I'm happy to share it. And I think it's helped him a lot. I think I've had a couple artists also say that it's helped a lot and it's brought them some extra attention. So I'm happy to do that.
That's funny. I've noticed on a couple of your, well, more than a couple of your Instagram posts, you're like art by, I can't remember his Instagram username. And I always go there. It's like, oh, I wonder if he's uploaded anything yet. It's like, no, I still hasn't.
Right? Yeah.
Like, are you sure? Do you have the right?
It's Bruins. And he's the one that he's doing an animation right now for a Gallery 3025, which should be out by the end of the month. Actually, I'm pretty pumped about that. But yeah, when I first connected with Bruins, I got him. I convinced them to set up a Patreon, which was the same thing we just talked about. Like, he was like, well, I'm worried about, like, is this okay, can I set up a Patreon? I was like, well, you know, you can always, Patreon is for the person, you can always support the person, like there are no legal issues with that. But yeah, I got him to set it up, and basically just he created an account, you know, and I signed up as a patron, and for like 4 months I was like his only patron. I was like, do something with your Patreon. And then when I started kind of promoting his stuff on the gallery for the animation, I made a point to like put the link for his Patreon. I was like, if you want to support Dan directly, do this. And he got 6 more patrons, and so, like, you know, I'm 1 of 7 now. But some artists, just they're just not comfortable with that, and it's tough, you know, with you know, Kevin, you were talking about kind of the creation process in the studio, and it was making me think that really for things to succeed, you have to have someone at top, which is kind of a jack of all trades, you know, and that's why CEOs and stuff get paid a lot and creators get paid a lot, because it's like, it's very hard to find somebody who knows enough about a lot of things to bring the pieces together. And yeah, most creatives don't want to promote. Like, I hate promoting. It's like pulling nails when I do it. Like, I'm blasting on Reddit and Facebook, and I feel a little dirty every time I do it, but I'm reassured by the fact that people actually enjoy it and they appreciate the fact that I pointed them to it. And it's not cheap meme content, which drives me crazy too. It's like, absolutely, here's this 5-minute meme that I made. You know, it's like, oh, I put 5 hours into scheduling and recording and editing this. You know, 5 hours is generous, you know, if I, you know, that would be great. But yeah, so there's actually effort in it. But it's been fun. You know, I really appreciate you guys kind of taking the time to talk. You know, I know, I talked briefly about my own experience with Lego, and it really helping me through some hard times with work and just kind of getting my mind off. And you know, and those kind of good memories of childhood Lego building and grown up Lego building, and kind of seeing, you know, kind of this very cool stuff that you guys have been doing. It's been fun. A little trip down memory lane. And, you know, I feel like this will be, especially Kevin, with your post that I sent on Instagram, was like the most popular, you know, one on my Instagram. I think people out there love Lego. I think at some point, that's, it's like, really, people cool that don't like pets, Lego, you look at them weird. It's like, what? Yeah. You don't like pets? You know, it's like same with Lego. If you don't like Lego, it's like, what's wrong? You gotta like Lego. Like, everyone likes Lego.
It's really cool because, like, yeah, what we're doing, like, Yuval and I, we're doing, like, really sci-fi mechs, right? That's not everybody's cup of tea. But, yeah, everybody's dabbled in Lego, mostly everybody. You're right. Every once in a while, I see those people when I post my mechs, they're like, oh, I like it, but I really, you know, I really hate Lego. So, what?
What? Don't leave that person alone with your kids.
I've never heard anyone say that. It would be more like, you can do that with Lego. It's never that's cool, but kind of stupid because it's a kid's toy, right?
Yeah.
You know, you don't typically hear that.
That's funny. So if you want to find these guys on online, you can go at Hanson Bricks on Instagram or Gothbricks 2000 on Instagram. And then I believe it's also Hanson Bricks on YouTube. And Yuval, what's your YouTube channel name?
Same thing. Instagram, YouTube, and Flickr is all Gothbricks 2000.
Excellent. All right. So find those guys there. Check out their awesome creations. And yeah, I look forward to that catapult, you know, and all the new stuff. You know, it's like, oh, you know, one before we sign off, Yuval, can we see something move?
Oh, and let's see if I can.
Something articulate.
Here's a leg. No, this is a. Let's see. So this is this is a typical like sisterhood leg. So, I mean, can you see it move? I don't know. Let's see. You know, it's
Yo, well, when are you going to start doing stop motion videos of your mechs?
You
said you've had so much time to burn.
Yeah, I just posted actually a little digital. I mean, people don't think stop motion because it's digital, but so that's full like articulation, right? If you can see.
Yeah.
Awesome. I've been doing a little bit of stop motion in studio, and I just posted a little video on Instagram of one of my vehicles. But yeah, I would love to do real stop motion, but that's a studio space problem of its own, right?
Each time, so
yeah, it's a couple of $1,000 worth of equipment to get that set up to look good, but awesome. Well, thanks for sharing. Yeah,
I just tell us that one final thing. I was gonna say, like, we're just two guys that are doing Lego mechs. Like, if you Google Lego mechs or BattleTech Lego, there's so much cool content that's been made. So if it's something you want to dig into, yeah, just go use a search engine and you'll find a lot of cool stuff.
Awesome. Well, thanks again, guys. And for those listening, you can find Renegade HPG. Make sure you are checking out Instagram and YouTube and Facebook, as well as YouTube, which most of you are listening to this. But we are also on Spotify now, as well as iTunes. And so hopefully people can listen in the car as well and enjoy these conversations. But thanks for taking the time with us. This was fun. Kevin, Yubal, I really appreciate your time. And we'll connect back, certainly maybe once that catapult is built, and we'll kind of, blast that at least on social media, if not maybe talk about it. And I'll be waiting for the stop motion from you all. So we'll see the articulation in action.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
Very cool.
Yeah, thanks very much, everybody. Travis. It was fun today.
You're welcome. All right.
See you guys.
So that was a ton of fun recording, guys. Thanks for listening. If you're still here and you want to kind of support the channel, definitely be sure to check out Renegade HPG on Patreon. If you can throw some bucks there, I would love to increase kind of the production quality of a lot of videos, maybe get some fresh art, get some quality, sharp editing. And if I can get that Patreon built up, that's definitely kind of more that I can use to kind of build the channel. So if you've been enjoying this content and you want to throw a couple bucks to this project, to Renegade HPG, definitely do so. And if you are a big fan of BattleTech art, as I am, you should also be checking out Gallery 3025 on Patreon, where we're using that as basically a crowdfunding source to support artists in the community that are creating BattleTech content for everybody to enjoy. So definitely check that out. Subscribe, like if you haven't already, and we'll catch you at the next video. Bye.